More than a year since they toppled longtime dictator Hosni Mubarak. Egyptians are set to vote for a new president. But what will the new Egypt look like? As Egyptian authorities cut gas exports to Israel, questions have risen as to whether the new Egyptian government will speak for the growing anti-Israeli sentiments among the public. I'm Homa Lesgi, and this is another edition of News Analysis.
Egyptians will go to the polls in late May in the first presidential election since the ouster of former president Hosni Mubarak. The vote comes as the Electoral Commission has disqualified 10 candidates from contesting. Among them are three frontrunners: Khairat el-Shater, a top Muslim Brotherhood official, Salafist candidate Hazem Salah Abu Ismail, who was disqualified because his mother held an American passport, and Mubarak's controversial former spy chief and vice president, Omar Suleiman. The disqualifications have drawn sharp criticism of the ruling generals and fueled allegations that they're working to ensure that Egypt's next president is someone over whom they'll be able to exert influence. There are also speculations that the military is seeking to cause a rift between supporters of Islamic parties. Among the remaining candidates are former Arab League chief Amr Musa, former member of the Muslim Brotherhood Abdul Munaim Abul Fatuh, and the Brotherhood's backup candidate Mohammed Musri. Although Musa was part of the previous government, he was not disqualified from the race, giving the impression that he's the military ruler's preferred candidate. In another development, Egyptian energy companies have canceled a deal to supply Israel with natural gas. They cite Israel's failure to pay its payments as the reason. But with the election day approaching, some see it as more of a temporary political move aimed at affecting the presidential election. The unpopular gas deal has had a negative image among the Egyptian public. Over the past year, the pipeline has been repeatedly blown up, disrupting supply to Israel. Tel Aviv says that cancelled agreement will disrupt an already shaky peace treaty between the two sides and has demanded that Cairo reverse the decision. However, with anti-Israeli sentiment running high among Egyptians, it seems establishing close ties with Tel Aviv would be a political cost no future Egyptian president is willing to pay.
Joining me now live from London is defense and Middle East expert Christopher Walker. Also with us live from Cairo, Egyptian presidential candidate Abdullah Al-Ash'al. And with us on the line from Belfast, author and Middle East affairs expert Mr. Saeb Shaas. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. My first question to our guest in Cairo, Mr. Ash'al. Let's first address the question of the three candidates who were disqualified, Mr. Ash'al, the three prominent ones. Some would ask if the disqualification process was about preventing former regime officials from running. Why has someone like Amr Musa, for instance, been allowed to run? What do you think was the reason behind this disqualification process, and why do you think Amr Musa is running?
Amr Musa is a part of the old regime, and he has to be eliminated from the race. But in the street, the people understand all that, and they are protesting against him running for the presidential elections. But in the law, draft law, which had been drafted by the parliament and which is now before the military council to ratify it, there is no ministers in the rank, because they were afraid that if they include ministers, the Minister of Defense, who is the head of the state now, would be included, and this is going to block the whole process. This is why you have this divergence between the legal process and the popular process. The popular process is insisting that Amr Musa is a part of the old regime with Ahmed Shafiq and with General Hussam as well, who is representing the intelligence service. The three were a part, integral part of the old regime, and the old regime had been disqualified in general by the revolution on the 25th of January 2011. So there is no way for them to run. Even if they run, they have to be blocked by the people themselves. They also tried to get some attorneys to authorizations for them or support but they bought them by money. And this was a good indication for the people to see how the corrupt candidates would be also corrupt presidents. And this is something which has very significant meaning before the Egyptian citizens.
Well, let's go to London now with this. Christopher Walker, the question about why the military rulers did go ahead with this disqualification process, why contradictions exist. Some analysts have concluded that this is because they have their preferred candidates, and Amr Moussa is actually the preferred candidate of both the Supreme Army Forces, known as SCAF, and the United States. Would you agree with that conclusion?
Yes, I think I would. He's by far the best known Egyptian diplomatic face in the West, in Europe and in the United States. He's very well liked, actually. He's an extremely amiable man, a skilled diplomat. I always remember him for his huge cigars. But there's no doubt at all that the West would like to see him in charge and would be reassured. He's quite, I think, more popular on the street in Egypt than you might think, in that he has taken a hard line against Israel in the past. And of course, not only is he well known in the West and in America and in Europe, but he was head of the Arab League. So he's pretty well in a uniquely qualified position, though, as your previous commentator said, and I agree with him, it's got a strong smell of the old regime about it.
Right.
But this is always the trouble with revolutions. When they take over, when anybody takes over, they have to have somebody with some experience. Otherwise, the new people are running around not knowing anything at all. And you could hardly have that in such an important strategic country as Egypt, the biggest populated country in the Arab world. So,
right,
altogether, I think Mr. Moussa will emerge triumphant.
Right, well, let's go now to Saeb Shass with us on the line from Belfast. Mr. Shass, we also know that one of those candidates who was disqualified was the Muslim Brotherhood candidate. What is basically the ruling general's problem with the Muslim Brotherhood? And would you agree that the military rulers, by this process of getting involved in the election, as some observers are saying, are trying to create division among Islamic parties at the same time as they're trying to divide people's votes?
It's part of what I see in the creating of the counter-revolution in the beginning. The SCAF thought was aligning itself with some political forces, such some Muslim parties as well joined that. They can present a counter-revolution to the Egyptian revolution as a revolution, and then they can appease the some parties which joined the SCAF with their winning in the parliament, which will be a useless tool, as nothing can even pass through the, there have to be approved by SCAF. And this is the game, which is, they thought they won till appeared on the arena Omar Suleiman as a presidential candidate for the election. And the Muslim Brotherhood as well wanted to face that by renegade on four, that they are not going to run for the presidential election. They thought they're going to take all the cake, the executive and the legislative powers as well. And here some of the liberals and even leftists and nationals seen the danger of Egypt controlled totally by the Muslim Brotherhood and some Salafists. And that rang the bell with the alliance which was created by SCAF with some Muslim Brotherhoods. And the battle started in here. But then we can notice the Muslim Brotherhoods and some Islamic parties, they've seen the SCAF is a proper counter-revolution tune, and they went last Friday to the Tahrir Square to join the revolution, and they give the indication that all forces right now are united in Egypt to engage in a new revolution that is needed against ISCAP, against the counter-revolution.
Mr. Shahid, I could stop you there, if I may. You're referring there to the protest that was taking place in Tahrir Square, a new revolution, you say. I'd just like to go back to Cairo and bring this up with Mr. Ash'al. Mr. Ash'al, first of all, this qualification process, the whole election process, you were talking to us about the people on the streets, the demands that they've been voicing. How is this going to overall affect the election process? Now, people are facing now the less recognized candidates, first of all. Do you think that it's going to affect the level of their participation or even their views as to how the future Egypt is going to look like?
Yes, we in fact have two camps. The first camp is the camp which is looking for Egypt to be independent and to be flourishing, to be owning its own resources, and to be standing up to its feet after it had been subjugated by the United States and Israel. The second camp, in fact, belongs to the old regime, which had been minimizing Egypt and making it a burden on the region, and allowing many small countries to interfere in the affairs of Egypt. So this is why I think the people have to understand exactly who is going to build Egypt and who is going to complete the destruction of Egypt. And I think this is very important. But another thing which is very crucial now, that the people of Egypt had been impoverished to the sense or to the point, to the extent, that they could be bought. Some votes could be bought, and Amr Musa and Ahmed Shafiq and others were very active in buying their votes in the primary stage. And this is very dangerous. So we have to protect the will of the voters against this attraction. And secondly, we have to clarify to them who is that and who is that. And in this case, I think they would be free to elect whoever they want. But at the end of the day, we have a popular campaign against the remnants of the regime, and they have to be either disqualified by the Middle Council or to be discarded by the people themselves.
Right. Mr. Walker, something mentioned there by a guest in Cairo was the public sentiments in Egypt. We've been seeing among the public in Egypt a lot of anti-Israeli sentiments, for one, at the same time that we're hearing that Egypt is cutting its oil exports to Israel, and that's been welcomed by the public in Egypt. Basically, do you think that the next Egyptian government, the future government, will be one that will go ahead with these public demands, and that we will see changes to ties between Egypt and, for instance, the U.S. and its major ally, Israel?
I think we will, because there's no doubting the feeling of the ordinary Egyptians. They've never been in favor of this treaty from the very beginning. And as you will remember, long before the Arab Spring was even heard of, it was known throughout the world as the Cold Peace. There was no love lost, it was just a fairly practical arrangement. And as such, I think it probably will survive to an extent, though it's being endangered not only by the sudden ending of the rather important oil deal, which the Israelis today, interestingly enough, are trying to pass off as some sort of technical argument over prices rather than any sort of diplomatic gesture. I would see it far more as a gesture that it was something that could be fairly easily unloaded. I don't think anybody's expecting the whole deal to collapse. I mean, then you'd have the prospect of a new war. And nobody, I don't think, wants that, even many of the revolutionaries. But what will go, perhaps I could coin a new phrase, you know, we won't have a cold peace, we'll have a frozen peace. But it still will exist to an extent, though probably less Israeli tourists in Sinai, where the violence levels have gone up.
But, Mr. Walker, if I could just stop you there, if I may, a frozen peace, you say, rather than a cold peace. Mr. Saeb Shaas, I'd like to have your view on this as well. Already some people inside of Egypt or outside are saying that this decision that has been made by the current government in Egypt is only a political decision, that the military rulers are using this decision to win popular support because it's coming ahead of the elections. Now, in your opinion, do you think that this cutting of the gas exports to Israel is going to stand?
I think what you said and what the commentators are commenting about the SCAF, when I use this, yes, I think SCAF is trying to export the panic which they are going through before the Egyptian presidential election to Israel as the enemy number one for the Egyptians. And the United States of America and Israel is looking at this very, very closely, but they know SCAF is their boys in town who's trying to run the show on their behalf in Egypt. But at the same time, this is the first step. You know, like the gas supply, the Egyptian gas supply to Israel was imposed on the Egyptians, wasn't part of the peace treaty. But since the oil was stopped, they imposed the gas in 2005. And Egypt was robbed. They were taking it for very cheap price, a lot below the international prices. Egyptian citizens were paying double or triple the price of Israelis paying, and Egypt needed that gas while the Israelis taking it and not even paying for it. And some of these companies who were involving in buying the Egyptian gas are suing the Egyptian government after the attacks since the revolution and the pipeline in Sinai. They are suing the Egyptian government for billions, and they were taking it as well and not paying the Egyptian government, which is hundreds of millions they owe the military council of Egypt. So the SCAF found themselves in a big dilemma here, how to sort this, to come out of it popular and to push their candidates, which they are support, like Omar Moussa or the Secret Service general in the election, and to use that as they were become suddenly patriotic and national and anti-Israel. No, it's a game, and that game the revolutionary in Egypt understands very well. And by the time when the presidential election finished and ended in Egypt, the revolutionists learned their lesson and learned not to trust the SCAF and not to trust the puppets of the United States of America or Israel in Egypt. And since things like that will come gradually in Egypt, and Israel will go back to the position it used to be always, enemy number one of the Arab people of Egypt. And that's gonna happen step by step.
Right. Mr. Ash'al, already we're hearing Egypt's Minister of Planning and International Cooperation, I'm quoting him, saying that Cairo is ready to re-export gas to Israel only via a new deal and new prices. And that's again raising the question of whether this issue of cutting this gas export to Israel is going to stand. It's a 20-year deal. Do you think the new Egyptian government is going to cut it terminally? And do you think that, how do you think this is going to affect the peace treaty between the two sides?
The problem between Egypt and Israel concerning gas deal is not the price only. It is the deal itself, which was very bad between Mubarak regime and Israel, through some agents like the Eastern Mediterranean Company, which had been created especially for the deal, and also the license given or the permission given by the cabinet to the Minister of Oil, so as to give oil, to provide oil to the other Egyptian private company, which is Eastern Mediterranean, created by Hussein Salem. The problem now is why the Military Council now decided to stop gas from Israel. Why? This reminds me of the case which had been also disclosed concerning the financial, the foreign finance to the non-governmental organizations, which had been opened in a very suspicious way, and it was closed up in a very dirty way, in the sense that our judiciary organ had been humiliated, and the sovereignty of Egypt, in fact, was violated. So I'm very suspicious about that, because the Military Council didn't give us any impression that it has a heart to do something like this before. And we were exhorting the Military Council to implement the judicial decision, which had been, in fact, rendered by our administrative courts, and the Military Council refused. They didn't refuse even. They didn't talk, they didn't clarify. So I'm afraid that this has something to do with, first, anything that is cooked up now in Sinai against Egypt, and secondly, for the presidential elections, so as to make a laundry for the face of the Military Council to support someone like Amr Moussa in the race. So
Mr. Ashraf, if I could just jump in here, the question that I want to put to you, just quickly if you could give a response, is looking at the situation right now between Israel and Egypt. I mean, Avigdor Lieberman, he's referred to Egypt as still a dangerous country for Israel. Basically, do you think that the new Egypt is going to go ahead with this? And how will this, in your view, affect the peace treaty? Is that peace treaty going to stand? And if it doesn't, do you agree with Christopher for Walker that that's going to result in war in the region?
Now, Israel considers Egypt in all cases as a dangerous country, but under Mubarak, Mubarak himself was the strategic asset for Israel. This is why after the removal of Mubarak, Israel is very hazy, is very nervous. She is not certain that a new regime is going to make the same service to Israel as Mubarak did. This is why they are trying to replace him by someone like Amr Moussa or Ahmed Shafiq to guarantee that Egypt is going to be subservient to Israel in the future. Concerning the peace treaty, I think the peace treaty had been misunderstood, because the Egyptian people made a complete assimilation between the peace treaty and the humiliation of Egypt. And to cut short, they said that if we revoke the peace treaty, Egypt will be independent. This is not correct, of course, because we know that the peace treaty is not exactly the legal expression of the political subservience of Egypt to Israel. This is something else. But I think that Israel is trying to find something else, the political power in Egypt, so as to support the peace treaty. The peace treaty itself is not going to be revoked, because any wise man cannot say that we remove it. It's nothing at all. It doesn't have any provisions against the Egyptian interests. On the contrary, we have to enforce, to oblige Israel to enforce it correctly. The problem is how far the new government would be nationalist and independent and looking for the interests of Egypt, not concerning the peace treaty itself as such.
Egyptian presidential candidate Mr. Abdullah Al-Ashal joining us there live from Cairo. Thank you very much, sir. Big thank you as well to our guest in London, Christopher Walker, defense and Middle East expert. And also with us on the line from Belfast was author and Middle East affairs expert Mr. Saeb Shaas. Thank you very much for being with us. From me, Homa Lezgi, and the rest of the team, it's goodbye for now.